as you are sitting there experiencing the delight of stillness, find out how you can observe everything equanimously. Find out how you can observe every thought that is coming to the mind, every feeling, every bodily sensation that is arising, whether painful or pleasant. Find out how you can observe all these phenomena without craving or aversion. Find out if observing their impermanence facilitates maintaining the equanimity of mind. Just that mere awareness of impermanence. Find out if you are irritated by the sounds of the trucks flying by the interruptions created by children making noise, or whatever it may be. Find out how you can observe everything that is happening without reacting with aversion or craving. Notice how everything that arises, how it passes away. Everything that comes to be, how it ceases to be. Cognize that phenomenon of impermanence. Okay, now you can gently lower your neck. At home, you will obviously continue this practice for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, or an hour. But here, we have to simply learn how to do it, and then actual practice happens at home in seclusion. Okay, now with exhalation, slowly bend down. Open your eyes very slowly, very gently, knowingly. And inhale as you gently come up, and you're slowly opening it. It's open but not open, simply looking into nothingness. You can blink a couple of times. It should be a gradual, steady transition from meditating to not meditating. Okay, now you can rub your hands and just touch yourself, and if you want, you can rub your eyes. Great. Wonderful. Let's grab the chair. Exercises here. So just grab a few resins. And now your awareness is heightened. There is sharpness in your mindfulness. So it will facilitate understanding what is happening as we do this exercise. So I want you to very slowly put the resins in your mouth and take your attention inside the mouth and feel the taste there. Actually, feel the taste, that's the key. You feel something in your mouth, right? As you chew. So try to figure out what is that feeling. Try to cognize that. Very, very subtle, but very profound. Try to figure out what is that sweetness. So your attention is completely inside the mouth, and you are trying to feel the sensation in the mouth. You might find it sweet, right? What is that sweetness? What is that experience? Cognizing it. Understand. Now find out who is experiencing it, who is feeling the taste. This is the subtlest experiment of all. Can you try to cognize who is testing it? Do you think you are testing it because there is a feeling of sweetness in the mouth? Do you feel that it is I who is feeling the sweetness? Or do you feel it's just the experience of sweetness? It's just that consciousness of sweetness. That was related to the taste. Now we're going to try the same thing for the experience of smell. So just give me your hand. I want you to consciously smell the smell. Sorry. Consciously smell the smell. Very consciously. And as you are smelling, trying to find out, trying to cognize what is happening. Are you smelling it? Are you smelling it? Or there is just the smell awareness? Or there is just that smell consciousness? Is it just the phenomenon of smell, or it is some eye, some entity that is smelling something? Now go back to your breath. Breath is more subtler than the external stimuli. Like we use this object as an external stimuli, we used this object as an external stimuli. We're trying to cognize the breath itself, find out who is breathing. Is it you who is breathing, or it's the body that is breathing? That's awesome. That's wisdom. You know, when we realize that it's the body that is breathing and not I, meaning there's no breather behind the breath. It's a profound understanding of who we are. It's the profound understanding of body-mind consciousness. It's the profound wisdom.
Unless intentionally breathing, then you are breathing. Body.
In fact, as you go deeper into this, you will realize that the intentional breathing, also there is no breather behind it. What is there? It is an intention. It's just a mental phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So when, in conventional language, I'm saying you are breathing or breathe intentionally, what is basically happening is the element of intention is arising and it's facilitating that intentional breath. So there is no person behind the intention also. Intention is just a mental phenomenon. Just like breathing is a bodily phenomenon, intention is a mental phenomenon, every thought is a mental phenomenon. So the point is, there is no thinker behind the thought. Guys, understand. Let's understand this. This is enlightenment. And I'm not saying it's that simple. But just at least intellectual understanding at the IQ level. That there is no thinker behind the thought.
thinking is just a mental phenomenon. Intention is a mental phenomenon. When we understand that, then what happens? We are not attached to our thoughts. That's the beauty of understanding that there's no thinker behind the thought.
So Jeff, when I say I am thinking, you're saying there's no I?
Right. The old philosophers used to say, I think, therefore I am. Right? But that is no longer. Because our consciousness has evolved to such a level that we have understood that thinking also is a phenomenon. There's no thinker behind the thought. Very, very subtle, but eventually with practice, just like you have understood that breathing is a bodily phenomenon, heartbeat, which we worked with, was a bodily phenomenon. If you don't have any control over your heart, then how can you say it is yours? Or it is you who's having it, right? It was just conditionally changing. When there were aerobic conditions, it was breathing fast. When there were non-aerobic conditions, it was not beating. You had absolutely no control over it. But breathing is so intimate that we feel we are breathing. But it's extremely intimate. But you guys said, we are not breathing, the body is breathing. And that is the moment of enlightenment. Just as we understand body is breathing, there is no breather behind the breath. We understand in thoughts, there is no thinker behind the thought. As we continue, we begin to understand that there is no experiencer behind the experience. That is the ultimate truth. That whatever we have experienced here, you experience the taste in your mouth. You might be thinking that I am tasting it sweet. You experience the aroma. You might be thinking, I am experiencing the aroma.
Senses are doing that.
Sorry?
The senses which we have in our body, mm-hmm. they are doing their work.
That's one part of it, and we will get to that. With contemplation, meditation, with continuous steady practice, begin to understand that experience is a phenomenon of body-mind consciousness. There is no I behind it. And when we realize that experientially, then there is no attachment to what happens in our life. Ultimately, that's the fruit of that wisdom, that when we realize that these are all experiences that are happening, it's not me. Meaning, when there is a failure, you understand it as a failure, not my failure. Quote unquote. When there is a disease, you understand it as disease, a bodily phenomenon, which is governed by conditionality, not my disease. Then guess what happens? We are able to cure that disease more efficiently, more effectively, more profitably.
So Jeff, are you saying there's that separation of the attachment, the I part?
It is the I which creates attachment.
I'm saying you're describing the separation of the attachment. It's not my disease, it's just a disease.
It's a disease, right.
Which means you can focus on the disease and not focus on the I.
In fact, what we are ultimately trying to learn is that there is no I itself. Okay. And please don't just accept it because I'm saying it, because it won't do any good. You have to experientially understand, like you said, I was so overwhelmed by joy when you said that it's the body that is breathing, you know, that awakening. Similarly, it has to come through awakening, through experiential understanding. And it has profound implications. All suffering, all unsatisfactoriness, all imperfections arise because we are attached to the body. As my body. We are attached to the mind as my mind. We are attached to the consciousness as my consciousness. There is only body. There is only mind. There is only consciousness. And there is that body-mind-consciousness phenomenon which is driven by conditionality. There is no I in any of it. just accept this as a hypothesis.
Okay.
This is very important because this is very profound, and it's important to begin somewhere. So this is our hypothesis. And then as you're here, and after you go out of here, you're constantly observing all phenomena and noticing that you have no control over anything. Everything is happening as it is. As, you know, just like we work with the heartbeat. Right? Then you will say, well, what about the will? What about willpower? What about intention? What about volition? And we actually went through that. The key to understand is that those are all mental phenomena. When you are initiating the resolution and trying to sit there longer, it is not you who is doing it. It is the phenomenon of resolution, it is the element of resolution which facilitates sitting for a longer time. And this is important to understand so that we don't develop ego. And it's called the meditator's ego. Even meditators have egos, even spiritual leaders have egos, all of them have egos, because that understanding is still not there, that there is no I. It's scary. It's scary to know that there is no I.
Do you have any details or any book like we can borrow to read?
Sure, good question. In fact,
or do you have any file on the computer like you can email us so we can learn in detail?
You bet. The reason I'm audio taping all this is because it will be all on the website that I'm putting together, so that anybody can download it. And also, there's a lot of literature on it, so you can go there and read. So I'm glad you asked that. I've been working on that, and it's important.
Like you have somebody, some other author's book or something like you think is good.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I can give those references as well. But the website that I'm developing will have plenty of literature, plenty of information on it. So basically, I was constantly using the word cognition, cognition, cognize, cognize. Because it is directly related to phenomenon of consciousness. When I say there is no experiencer behind experience, what I'm relating to is consciousness. So, when you experienced sweetness, it is not you who's experiencing sweetness, but it is taste consciousness. Very simple. When that object touched your tongue, which is body, when non-material elements contact the material elements, there is an experience. That's how it works. So you have body, which is your tongue and sensitivity. This is the external stimuli. And then there is mind consciousness. The moment it touches, instantly, the taste consciousness arises. It is so instantaneous that we don't see it, right? Because it is so incredibly, hopelessly fast that we can't comprehend it, that okay, this is a test consciousness that has arisen independence of the tongue, and out of which comes the taste of the raisins. Because we don't know that, we feel I am tested. So it's that delusion.
It's still hard to accept that there is no I.
So how did time get there? It's take time.
You started already. Today you experienced that you have no control over the heartbeat. You know.
Jeff, how about the yogis that do? The yogis that can moderate their bodies and stuff.
Sure. And just like I said, intention was not your intention, but intention as a mental phenomena. Similarly, when a yogi is controlling the breath, we say that they can control their breath and they can control even their lifespan and all kinds of extraordinary supernatural things. Those are also phenomena of mental mind consciousness. So their intention is so extraordinary, and we talked about will, right? They have exceptional will. That exceptional will is facilitating controlling of breath. Now that will is not their will. It's just a phenomenon. It's a phenomenon. just like sun rises and and sets, because the earth rotates around the sun. It's just a phenomenon. There is no being, no entity that is moving the sun from this end to that end. Everything is a phenomenon, just like it rains. It's not Mr. Cloud pouring water on us. It's a phenomenon. There is evaporation, and then there is condensation, and then there is rain.
So where does spirituality wind into all this?
This is what real spirituality is all about, that there is no I, but there is only spirit, which means consciousness. To the extent we eradicate I, or the delusion, or in psychological terms, ego. Psychologists use the term ego or ego, the Greek word ego. To the extent we eradicate that, to that extent we become spiritual. Basic definition of spirituality.
The elimination of ego?
Sorry?
The elimination of ego?
Absolutely. Or even if you want to shorten it down, you can say egolessness is being spiritual.
This is talking about I and all these things. Of course, you need to get to that point, and I agree, bodily phenomena, a lot of bodily phenomena happen. Like, for example, you know, if you say, close your eyes, it's like bodily phenomena, you don't have any control on it, right? But in a practical life, frankly, when you're talking about this, and I'm trying to apply it to I'm trying to see what, I'm not a complete yogi or anything, but I'm trying to see how it can benefit my life. And
there are a lot of practical implications.
Oh, yeah.
In your daily life, if we live with an egoless state of mind, then there is effortlessness in our action. And you have to experience this.
Let me tell you, that's exactly what I've been going through. I've been here in Colorado since last 4 years. I'm planning on moving, frankly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was like, it was very hard. Not for me, it was not that hard for my wife and everybody. But I was thinking, when you're telling all this, I was thinking, there's no I. No, it's like a phenomenon. If something happens, if you feel it's good. So I feel good now.
Good. Well, I'm glad.
But frankly, you know, but what I'm saying is, it's not connected to the your spiritual or whatever it is, but practically, you know, when I start thinking, practicality makes, I'm a practical man, frankly. I'm trying to understand your teachings to apply practical life.
Absolutely. Simple things like somebody says bad words or criticizes you or treats you unfairly. If you think, I have been hurt, quote unquote, I have been treated unfairly, then you see how you feel. You feel miserable. You feel like taking revenge and stuff like that. But if you are aware that, well, there is an unwholesome mind that has said some words to me, that has come and gone away, arisen and passed away, that's it, you know? It has nothing to do with me, because there is really no I. It is his perception, which is a mental phenomenon. Very simple. Everything, looking at everything as a phenomenon, then there is no reaction.
I think it's a very difficult to comprehend concept.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see, letting some things go is the way to feel good or not to bother about.
Absolutely.
What happened versus what
and
is
how
happening.
Do we let go? If we let go with the foundation of impersonality and impermanence, then that is genuine let go. If I just tell you, hey, why don't you just let go? It's not gonna happen. But if you establish yourself in the understanding of impermanence, meaning everything comes and goes. If you establish yourself in the understanding of impersonality, meaning there is no I, it's just body-mind-consciousness phenomenon. When we are established in that understanding, then letting go is automatic. Then letting go is letting go. It is not separation. So we have removed that danger of separation. Similarly, we remove the danger of expression. You know how we either want to express or we want to suppress. Many of the solutions that we get from a lot of lifestyle gurus is express. That means if you have a desire, go and fulfill it. Right? Some of them will say, don't react to it, suppress it. They will not say suppress it, but they'll say just don't go for it if you have a desire. Right? So either you are fulfilling your desire to take care of your desire, or you are suppressing your desire to take care of desire. And we are not doing either of the two. What we are doing is, we are in the middle. We are simply neither expressing nor suppressing, simply observing and letting go.
Well, and how do people create, in the material plane, relationships or money or things, I mean, on this plane, how does that occur in that context?
It's all just like we are here. There is interconnectedness between us. If you think you are Daryl, if I'm thinking I am Mr. Sam, you know, you and you and you, you, then there is that gap, separation. Then we are all looking at each other, judging, evaluating, analyzing, protecting our turf, so on and so forth. But if you think that these are all manifestation of body-mind-consciousness phenomena, then you feel that unity consciousness, and many gurus talk about unity consciousness, right? How does that come? It comes from understanding that we are essentially same. Essentially, our bodies are made up of the same thing. Essentially, our minds are made up of the same thing. Essentially, consciousness. We are all made up of the same phenomenon of consciousness. Next time, we'll go through that deeper. What is consciousness and different types of consciousness? But you see that beauty there, mm-hmm. of knowing that we are all the same, essentially.
So we're talking about oneness, right?
Oneness, ultimately. For example, if this color is brown and this is red and black and yellow, they look different, but essentially, what is it? It's light. Similarly, you look at apple or orange or pineapple, they look different, but essentially, meaning if you were to cut slices of it, look under the microscope, they'll all look the same. What is the meaning of essential? Meaning ultimately. They're all made up of fructose, fiber. Mm. Okay. In fact, if you really want to go crazy about it, you can just take off your, peel off your skin and look under the microscope and go with an even deeper microscope and deeper microscope and more powerful microscope. Eventually, you will see electrons, protons, neutrons. You will see quarks, bosons, leptons, and more sub- and subatomic particles. If I were to do the same thing, what will I find?
Same
thing. Literally, essentially. You know, Paul looks, you know, is white Caucasian and I'm Asian. You know, there is obvious such distinctness, right? But are we different if I were to take off? The same stuff.
Just molecules and energy.
Absolutely.
Thank you.